What is up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week. They are one of our longest running supporters of iLab. I'm talking about Indeed.com. Now, Indeed can be a founder's right-hand man because they're going to find you what you really want, a short list of quality candidates as fast as possible because you can do it all. Attract, interview, and hire all at Indeed. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process so you can find talent with the skills you need through tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. I'm going to tell you even more about Indeed during the break, but if you want to go check them out now, you just got to head over to Indeed.com/iLab. And if you go there, we're going to hook you up with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post. Get a $75 credit when you head over to Indeed.com/iLab. That's ILAB. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny and welcome to episode 204 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Sam, how are you doing, buddy? Welcome to the show.
Doing well. Johnny, how are you?
I'm good. I'm on my way back to Lithuania, where we were last time together.
What brings you there?
A wedding. No, and not mine.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a couple of men in Sri Lanka and I figured, you know, why not? So by the time this episode comes out, I will be in Vilnius if anyone's around.
I love it. So for any of the new listeners, like about a year and a half ago, just before COVID, Johnny and I met up in Vilnius. I was staying there for a month and Johnny came over and hung out. Awesome city. Really loved it. So jealous you're going back, Johnny, but I'll be back in the future.
Yeah, I'm excited. And what's nice is because you and I, even though we never actually used this phrase, we have been lifestyle investors now for the past maybe 4 or 5 years and kind of just making money to not for retirement, but to live off of.
You know, this is a great term and it's something that we're going to talk about in this episode with the lifestyle investor, Justin Donald. But I think we approach it from two different ways. All right, Johnny, I think for most lifestyle investors, it means passive income, strictly passive income. I think for us, we've sort of evolved the term to be like, hey, we want to invest in a way that allows us to just run around the world in maybe a more interesting way. So passive income's key, but also investing in some different countries and different places that give us a little bit of a lifestyle perk has sort of been become an essential ingredient to our investing strategy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always kind of liked the term lifestyle entrepreneur or location independent entrepreneur, which I guess also kind of turned into, you know, location independent, you know, investor, because, you know, both you and I have been, you know, living overseas for what, 5-10 years now, and just making all of our money kind of wherever we are and not waiting until, you know, we're what, 67 or 70 years old to start enjoying life. We're doing it now.
Certainly kicking the butt from our friend Bill Perkins.
Yeah. But I am very curious, like what the real, you know, difference is between being a lifestyle investor and investing in, you know, the types of deals that, you know, he likes to push versus investing in something more traditional that, you know, we talk about like index funds or Vanguard, things like that.
Yeah. I think we'll definitely explore that on this episode. And then I have some ideas about that for the outro. But for now, let's bring on Justin Donald. He's a lifestyle investor and he's going to share some of his strategies and how he's gotten from the hustle into a very, very successful guy. He's built also some very interesting investment clubs and forums. So take a listen to, well, I guess to Sam Marks and Justin Donald. I've never introduced myself like that before. That's your job, Johnny.
Definitely stay till the outro because I have a lot of thoughts on this. I mean, honestly, In general, I just try to avoid any kind of investment guru or anyone who, you know, has these, you know, expensive clubs to join. But I think him, you know, in his book, just kind of glancing through it, it does have some good stuff. So let's definitely talk in the outro. But maybe we can learn something during this interview. So here is Justin Donald.
This week's episode of Invest Like a Boss is sponsored by Indeed.com. A good leader knows their limits. They know how to delegate. They know where they're needed, when they're needed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed can be a founder's right-hand man. Indeed is an unbelievably powerful hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. You see, Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process so you can find talent with the skills you need through tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Indeed makes it easier for star applicants to shine because they have over 135 assessment tests, anything from cooking to coding and everywhere in between. And we're going to get you started off right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/iLab. You'll get a $75 credit just for heading over to Indeed.com/iLab. That's Indeed.com/ILAB. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Guys, we're back. I got Justin Donald here with me, and we are going to be talking about, well, the man himself. We might call him the Warren Buffett millennial investor or the lifestyle investor. But Justin, it's an honor to speak with you, and super excited. Long time to wait to have you on the show.
Well, Sam, it's an honor to speak with you. Thanks for the kind words, but I got to let you know, you guys are doing an incredible job with your podcast. And from a guy that's been on a lot of shows, you guys are just top notch. I've listened to a ton of your episodes prior to this, just because I like the content and the people that you bring on. So bravo to you guys.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. It's been a marathon. We just crossed 200 episodes, and I'll tell you, the learnings from the podcast have, I mean, it's lifelong dividends. And I know we'll be talking about dividends.
Yeah, right. Well, you did a great thing here, because not only are you educating the world with, you know, the great quality that you're producing, but in the process, you're doing what I like to do, which is you're kind of forcing your own education. So you're getting better at the same time. It's brilliant.
I love it. I look back to kind of the early days, and I was like, well, there's no better way to learn about a difficult and somewhat intimidating subject is to interview some of the smartest people in the field and force yourself to learn in front of an audience and kind of represent yourself as looking like you half know what you're talking about. So it's kind of what we did. But man, there is a lot to learn from you, sir. And I'm just thinking back to how we actually just recently got connected directly, but it's from a mutual friend, and I guess both a mutual business contact of ours, Brian Ravitt. But I started looking into much deeper into what you've been doing and to your path, and super impressive. And I think, you know, personally, I think we've been on somewhat similar journeys, but we actually have a common link back in the day, which I want to dig into, and that's Cutco.
Yeah, because, I love it. Yeah,
because you certainly went much higher up the ladder, Cutco, than I did. But man, I must have only been with Cutco 8 weeks, but I still look back on that and I was like, that was the best thing I ever did, next to like high school wrestling, where I was 0-23 and just got my ass kicked every day, but like went back out and just got my ass kicked every day. But Cutco was the best experience in terms of professional experience that you can cram into like an 8 week period, or of course longer like you did. But take us back, man. Take us back to your journey before you became an investor, and tie that into Cutco.
Yeah, you know, it's a great experience for sure. You know, I did it a little bit longer than you. I was able to check off years as opposed to weeks, but each step of the way was a little different. I mean, this is how I paid for college. So I went to the University of Illinois, and I remember when I went there, you know, my parents were like, how are you going to afford this? Because we can't afford this. So you might, you know, you better think of how you're going to pay for it all. And, you know, so I knew I had to find something that compensated me in a way that if I worked hard, I was rewarded for it as opposed to just something hourly. And it really was great. You know, I sold the product, I sold Cutco to pay for my college, graduated debt free, used that money to fund the operation of opening my own office with them, and kind of moved up the ranks on the management side. So, you know, I had a good number of friends that kind of stayed on the sales side, and I enjoyed that. And I eventually did become good at that. There's definitely like a hustle involved in that. Oh, yeah. And then on the management side, there's leverage, right? You're leveraging the opportunity to work through people. And I liked that. I thought, hey, this is ingenious. Instead of me being out, you know, pounding the pavement, I can have as many people as I can, you know, work with that I like, that I can, you know, recruit and train to do that. And that really kind of creates a lot more freedom.
Yeah. So did you go, I mean, at what point with Cutco did you realize that you wanted to be a full-time investor or to do something different? Because I feel like the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, circulates pretty well within the Cutco network. I mean, I know I was doing Cutco and I was reading that book at the same time. I know Brian Ravitt was at the same time. It was this whole like hustle to start a business, to become an investor type of methodology. But like, what point was that for you where you decide, all right, I know what I want to do, and then I'm going to make a path to moving on from Cutco?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because at that same time, I was also reading that book. It's funny to hear, you know, how our journeys coincided with Brian's as well. He's such a great guy. Right. And, you know, I'm thankful for him bridging our gap here. But, you know, I read that book and it was an eye opener. And I remember when I read Cashflow Quadrant, it was the game changer for me. And I just remember at one point in time, I was, you know, when you open an office with Cutco, there's a lot of entrepreneurial components to it. So you're not fully running your own business, but you're running the majority of it. You don't have to do fulfillment, which is really nice. There's a lot of back office on, you know, kind of the deliverables. But on the front office, there's plenty that needs to be managed. And so as a brand new person, it's just me. And I remember just long days, late nights, early mornings. And I'm so thankful for that experience of learning to grind, learning the work ethic, figuring out that I can't just keep doing this myself and that I need to train a team to help support me. But I remember on a Friday night, it was like 10:30 PM. All my friends were trying to get me to go out to the bars. I lived in Chicago at the time. And I just remember thinking, gosh, it would be really fun to do that, but I got to get up early tomorrow. I'm not done right now. And this is late. But I don't want this forever. I'm okay with this in this season today, because I know I'm going to create opportunities. So in the future, I don't have to do this. But as a family man, once I get married, once I have kids, I don't want to be working at 10:30 trying to, you know, start a business. And so I'm thankful that I was able to get that out of the way early on, learn many of those lessons. But I just had this profound realization. Number one, I need to build a team around me. I need scale and you know, systems to be in place so it's not relying on me. So that's like phase one. And then phase two is I need to completely exit this. And instead of having my time produce income, I need to have my income produce, or my capital produce income. And so that's kind of like phase two of it. And I really was able to, you know, follow both of those phases for a nice exit. Mm-hmm.
So presumably during your time at Cutco, you were saving, you were building up a bit of a net wealth that once you got and made the decision to go, you had some assets to work with.
Yeah. And really early on, what I started doing is I wanted to start buying rentals. You know, that was one of the things I learned from Robert Kiyosaki. And it was really cool. Just 2 weekends ago, I got to spend some time with him. Got a ton of time, one-on-one time with this guy. And it was unbelievable. I just posted something on you know, some of my social channels that, you know, he was just an inspiration to me, still is an inspiration. The guy's genius. Mm-hmm. And so really that kind of guided me down the path. And I had some friends that were doing some single family homes. I had purchased my first place, which was a primary residence. It was a condo, which I turned into a rental. And that it was actually like a horrible situation. Everything that could have gone wrong pretty much went wrong. And I should have been scared of real estate, like from here until forever. But, you know, I just, in the back of my mind, I'm like, no, if other people can do this, I know I can do this. And I had a friend that ended up selling all of his single family homes Like I had all these friends that were buying single family homes, a bunch of them bought them during the crash, a bunch of them pre-crash, a bunch of them post-crash. And then one of them was like, I'm going to sell all of them. I'm just going to start buying mobile home parks. You want to come to a mobile home park boot camp with me? And I was like, this sounds crazy. No, I don't. I have no interest in going to that. But he came back and he just started working hard. And I was like, wow, he's doing great things. This is creating great income. And he has a whole bunch of units that are, you know, collectively managed as opposed to just, you know, several, you know, single family homes all over. And so I decided in that moment, I probably should do this. You can scale it better. And the returns are infinitely better. I mean, it's night and day. So I ended up buying my first mobile home park that replaced my wife's income. She was a teacher at the time, and she was teaching business to high school students. And so she was able to stop working. And then I bought another one, and that replaced our, you know, survival income, just what it cost us to live every day, not lifestyle, just survival, right? This isn't like, you know, fun trips. This is just us not having to work, but on a very skimpy budget. And then bought another mobile home park, and that really covered our lifestyle and gave me the permission to know that I did not need to work or do anything that I didn't want to do, that I truly bought my time back.
So you bought the entire park, not just invested as a fractional owner.
Correct. Yeah. I bought it myself. You know, I had been saving aggressively. I mean, at one point in time for a good long stretch, I'd been saving 50% of the income that I was making. So instead of having my lifestyle increase, I just kept it the same, even as my income increased. And then I just knew I had to buy assets.
I don't know if this is just like a common thread with people in Cutco, but I've always found everyone I know in Cutco is very similar to that. They're just crushing, they're making tons of cash and they're saving aggressively. I don't know if is that something that's actually preached from management? Like when you were in management there, were you kind of loving that message to people that were working with you? Or is that just something that's, or maybe it's just not broad. It's just the people that I know within Cutco, but certainly seems common.
Yeah, I think that there are definitely some people that would communicate that. Cutco is an interesting organization because it's not like there's one company. It's almost like there are two separate companies underneath, you know, what, like their marketing arm is like two companies broken down into six regions, technically seven regions counting Canada. So it's almost like there are seven different companies being run. So each region has a different culture to it. And, but I do feel that I had some mentors through that process that were like, hey, you don't know. So maybe it wasn't like, hey, you should invest in real estate, but it was more like, hey, you don't know when things could fall apart. You should probably have cash just in case the business isn't booming.
And of course, we're all reading Robert Kiyosaki. So mentor at that point, right? So
that's right.
Dude, so you bought three mobile park homes. Were you already done with Cutco at that point, or were you still involved?
So at that point in time, that's really when I transitioned away. You know, I didn't need the income anymore. And this is actually a really funny story. So many of my friends are like, you're crazy. Why would you leave? You're doubling up your income. You know, you could be making twice as much. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. I'm not trying to make more money. The goal is to own my time. I want to buy my time back. I want to be able to do whatever it is that I want to do. I want to be able to go travel. I want to go, you know, hang out with my friends and my family. I want to spend my time on projects that fill me up, that I'm passionate about. And that is worth so much more to me than making twice as much. So to me, I always saw it as once my lifestyle was covered, I would just transition. And that's what happened. It was a very smooth, seamless transition.
So you bought your three parks and then you had the seamless transition. And then when did you really kind of cement your philosophy on here's what I envision as what seems to be you're being called the lifestyle investor. But when did you get kind of these pillars of like, all right, here's my strategy. Here's what I'm going to go after. And here's the kind of the path that I'm going to stick to. And then presumably you've scaled that significantly since.
Yeah. You know, some of this, Sam, was watching what previous investments did, what new trends were happening. At the time that I was exiting Cutco, I was also starting another company, a single family home maintenance company. So I had kind of done something similar in the mobile home space. So I had, you know, kind of created a rehab and maintenance company, and that would work on all the properties. And so a couple of friends and I started this company called IFM Restoration. And that company serviced single family home rentals for the largest institutional owners in the US. So, you know, your big institutional investors, anyone that has, you know, at volume, maybe like 5 or 10,000 home portfolios, all the way on up to Blackstone's Invitation Homes arm at 82,000 single family homes. And so, you know, with that business, it was interesting to see, because you could easily fall into the trap of working again, of like, you're trading time for dollars. And I really, really, really wanted to stay away from that. So as I helped build that company, there was a nice transition where I was able to move out as the company was scaling, offer capital, offer credit lines, offer things that would be valuable in a way that just didn't monopolize all my time. And just watching that company grow and what happened with, you know, my brilliant partners who just really ran with things, did a great job. But it was, again, reaffirming my capital can produce income. And if I have the time to think, I can make some great decisions. So instead of being so busy, I'm just reacting to everything, why don't I buy time, space, freedom, agency, just to be able to proactively create the life I desire, to be able to like think about the investments I've made, the ones that I want to make. And so over time, the, you know, my commandments, you know, so, you know, basically in my book, it's called The Lifestyle Investor, the 10 commandments of cash flow investing for passive income and financial freedom. It's my 10 criteria. It's why I decide to invest the way that I invest. And that was really just paying attention to trends that happen, results of, you know, all the investments that I'd done over the years, the ones that worked, the ones that didn't work. And really, I just wanted to get clarity in this time, in this season, in this space for what the future looked like. And the future looked like me owning time. I wanted to own my time.
So is that kind of central to the lifestyle investing strategy? It's all about time and passive income.
Yeah. And even more so than that, I think most people just live a life based on other people's demands, like reacting and responding versus kind of carving their own path. And I think a lot of people work a job that they don't enjoy, that they're not passionate about. Some people work a job that they do enjoy, but they work so many hours, it's hard to be passionate. So I just think if people can learn how to cover their expenses with passive income, and you guys are great about this on your show, it's amazing the world that it opens up, the energy, the passion, just the different opportunities you could do. You can take a doctor who's burnt out working 60 hours a week, but now they work 25 and they're in heaven again. And it's wonderful, you know, and you take an entrepreneur, and instead of being the bottleneck to their business, because everything has to run through them and they're trying to scale it themselves, when you buy them time, they make smarter decisions and better decisions, and they can put their, you know, money in different places. So let's say that money's taken care of for their, you know, expenses, their lifestyle. Well, they're going to reinvest the proceeds, the profit of their business differently, and they're going to take different chances and risks and you know, scale in a different way than what they would do just based on how they've always done it.
Right. So it seems like you've been primarily focused on real estate deals. Is that fair to say?
So I'd say at the beginning, that was really kind of my bread and butter. Started, you know, with mobile home parks. I've done every form of real estate, unless it's super obscure. And, you know, today I still, you know, I mean, the majority of my portfolio is still mobile home parks, but I still own, you know, self-storage, industrial distribution centers, single family homes. And I have a team that runs those, but those investments created so much cash flow for me that I had to find other places to put it. And so
that's a good problem to have.
It is. And it's funny because it's still a problem. A lot of people are like, oh yeah, I wish I had that problem. But you do have to be a good steward of that money. Yeah. And I didn't want to blow it. I wasn't trying to increase increase my lifestyle necessarily. I just wanted some other smart places for it. So that cash flow helped me find other areas that I wanted to learn and become savvy in. And I started investing in other operating companies that were cash flow positive with unique structures, which is, you know, really set up in a win-win way, but very de-risked for me. So in sometimes it might, you know, some cases it might be a royalty agreement or a rev share or, you know, some sort of equity with a, you know, maybe a debt component, but an equity kicker or something like that. And then I started getting into senior secured debt and having a lot of collateral backing different investments. So I've done this on a corporate level. I've done this, you know, with real estate, but I do this a lot, even with companies where maybe the company is doing so well, they don't want to give up equity, but they would do some sort of debt and you can get equity or warrants as a kicker for free.
I love it. So this is just broad deal making. And that's gotta be, from my view, that's got to be part of the fun of it, right? Like, I know you've done very well. We don't have to talk strictly about numbers right here, but I know you've done very well. Congratulations. And I mean, what's at this point, this kind of is an interesting question, I'm sure is discussed at a lot of roundtables with successful people. But at this point, what's the ambition to keep going further, right? Is it the game, or is it the, you know, if you double up from here, does it change your life? What's your ambition strictly from here?
So that's a fun question. And I'm really thankful that I asked myself this question before I was in this situation, because it led me down this path of, you know, what would you do if money's taken care of? You don't have to worry about it. Like, what do you spend your time doing? And so I was able to get great clarity before I was in the place that was a reality for me. So I took a year to just kind of figure out next steps. This is a handful of years ago, maybe 5 years ago at this point, 6 years ago. And we just traveled the world. You'll appreciate this. I know you're a big traveler. You know, we went to 13 different countries, my family, my wife and my daughter, and we just had a blast. It was incredible. And I found myself, so I was journaling most days of the week and capturing just, you know, ideas, thoughts, and the theme of what I was doing was I was reading every day. I was looking at investments that I thought were interesting that I either wanted to do or I just wanted to understand. And then I was teaching my friends how to create financial freedom. And so I realized, you know, it was pretty obvious that's what I should be doing. So I started doing more of that when I got back from my trip and my time off. And what was a hobby ended up turning into the lifestyle investor. So it's phenomenal because it was a hobby term business. But I always said, the goal isn't to scale this. Like that's not what I want. The goal is to educate as many people as I can that there's another way, that you don't have to do the nest egg approach and hope and pray that you've got enough money at retirement to live off the interest without spending the principal. And that if you have a long life that you can support it. That's a lot of hope. And I want to teach people that you can have an unbelievable lifestyle today. You don't have to pinch pennies right now, you know, for this future retirement that may or may not be. Often it's not what people think it's going to be. Why not live a killer life today? And so that's really the goal and the mission.
So that was the start to everything that you're doing beyond an individual investor, to start educating people, to start the lifestyle investor, presumably to write the book. And then at what point did you, in terms of like your deal origination and stuff, you mentioned you have a bigger team now. What point did that turn from kind of yourself going out and originating deals and negotiating deals to bringing on people to actually help support that and source deals for you?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Most of the deals that I get still today come from my network. They just come from friends, just different relationships that I have that I've, you know, kind of established over a long period of time. And I have a lot of friends that along the way I've been able to support and help in various ways. And so there's this, even though I never did anything where it was like, hey, you know, and down the road, just make sure you pay me back or hit me up. You know, it's not like that, but there is this element of reciprocity where people want to give me first dibs on something, or, hey, you know, you helped me in this tough time. I want to give you an opportunity here. So a lot of deals stem from that. Other deals just stem from, you know, other groups that I'm part of. I'm part of a good number of investor groups. But yeah, it's a fascinating thing, this world of deal flow, because the more deals you get, the more you kind of have to assess your criteria and make sure that you're not wasting time on things that are not going to be fruitful, and then find these gems of an opportunity.
Yeah.
But what is cool, I will say for sure, Sam, is we've got a lot of people that, you know, originally I think they want, you know, they might read my book or listen to my podcast, and they kind of want to get in the lifestyle investor ecosystem, and, you know, to have access to me or whatever that looks like. But the reality is the collective group is so much smarter than I am, like light years. And I think people join thinking they want more of me, but realize that it's this mastermind, this network of like-minded people that are brilliant in their own regard, in their own space, that help vet these deals. So everyone gets a say, and it's neat to see these experts in various different fields have their, you know, their two cents about everything and things you would never think of. So it just makes us a cohesive unit that is so much smarter than any individual could be.
So I thought this was super interesting, because this is actually how the topic of you came up when Brian, I guess Brian and I have been discussing investing maybe over the last couple of years, and both primarily with he was on this path forward where he was starting to make money, starting to save money, wasn't really worried about investing at that point, but he was on the path and started talking to him about investing. One day he wrote me and says, "Hey man, I found this like incredible investing group and I'm going to join it, and it costs X to join." And I was like, "Hey man, pump the brakes. Like, I know you're excited about this, but like, let's learn some basics first." And then I don't know what the next step was, but he basically was just like, "I'm in." And then he came back to me maybe a month ago and he was like, "Dude, this is like been the best experience ever. Like going to this event and meeting all these people and seeing the deal flow and the collective group thought and stuff." He's like, "I'm learning stuff so fast." And I was like, "Wow, man, like, you know, what's important is not how you get started. It's just getting started, right?"
Totally.
I get emails from my friends all the time. And still like, it's so repetitive at this point that I'm not even surprised, but it's, you know, I'm mid 30s. So most of my friends are mid 30s. And they're, for the most part, most of them are just coming into money. You know, they're just starting to get that 500,000 saved, that million saved. And they all have the same approach. They're like, you know, I just sold my house. I got, you know, X, and market seems to be at all time highs. My family friend has a financial advisor they recommended, and like, well, it's like the same shit. And I'm like, guys, just pump the brakes, chill out, like get some basics. And what I've realized is like, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you read books or listen to podcasts or join forums and seminars or groups or whatever. What matters is that this is going to be a lifelong asset to you, the investing and investing knowledge. And for you to just hand over the baton and your bank account to somebody else for management makes absolutely no sense.
Who makes money regardless of whether you make money or not. Let's point that out too. There's misalignment through and through.
Absolutely. And you're always going to be at the mercy of that person to A, perform, but also to just to tell you and like educate you. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to manipulate you. So my realization when Brian joined your group and came out of it, like, I was like, okay, point and simple, get started. No matter what path you take, get started in educating yourself and surrounding yourself with these people, because it's probably the most valuable thing. Like learning how to manage relationships and learning how to manage your personal finance investments, probably the two pillars that you really need for like success in like at least your middle ages, right? So I was right. Super thrilled to hear that he had such a good experience with you guys. That was a long-winded intro to your conferences and seminars, but I would love to hear more about the details of how you, you know, you initially put that on and how you operate those.
Yeah. So I wanted to create some sort of an event where everyone can get together. So our mastermind, you know, we capped it at 100 people. And we have a very high price point because we're really looking to attract a certain type of person who's ready to take action, that wants to learn, that wants to, you know, just take their life to the next level. And so, you gather these people together. We've got, I think, 16 or 17 different countries represented for, you know, members in the mastermind. And we do, you know, a bunch of stuff over Zoom. So it's really fun when you can get together and have, like, you know, this experience. We did a really fun event in the Black Hills of South Dakota over the summer.
Oof, love it.
And that was incredible. Had a bunch of people out for that, just out in beautiful nature. And it was a lot different of a feel. And then for our annual retreat, we did it here in Austin at the Omni Resort and Spa, which is my favorite venue to, you know, do any event at here in Austin. It's just a great place. And, you know, we had 90 people at the event, and it was, they just do such a great job. And what's cool is I had a bunch of really fun speakers come in, but some of the highlights from the members, well, first of all, everyone's just blown away with the caliber of the group. And so what ends up happening, because I have a really high bar on who I accept. So it's hard to get in, but when someone gets in, they're always impressed with everyone else that's in. And a lot of the conference was me interviewing with, you know, panel style or fireside chat style, just other members and what they've done, kind of their journey, mistakes they've made, successes that they've had. And it was just an incredible experience. So it was a ton of fun.
Love it. I love it. I got to get invited to the next one.
Oh, it's a blast. And you know, it's interesting because I had a lot of people say, "Hey, are you selling tickets to it?" And actually I wasn't. Like the goal was just to bring the mastermind together. So I didn't, I didn't charge anyone. They could fly in and come, but this was my gift to them. And so it was a mastermind only. And it was just neat seeing what happens. Cause I believe when you put, you know, people, impressive people together, you just put like-minded people together, the draw isn't going to be the event itself. That's like it's just the start, right? It's, it's, you meet people and then you feel comfortable to have the follow-on conversations. And then when you meet, you know, you're online, you've got this different relationship, and more depth. And so it makes it more fun because so many people look at our mastermind and they think, oh, the values, the passive income and all the deals. And for some people, that's why they join. I actually think the greatest value is the connections with like-minded people, the actual members themselves, and then the connections with, you know, advisors and just, you know, people that I use that I've vetted for, you know, the last 10, 15 years that are brilliant and experts at their craft. That to me, and then the education, of course, you learn something this year, but you can use it for like 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's the real value of it.
And how often are you running these in-person meetups? Like, granted, COVID's probably been a bit of a deterrent, but what's your plan with that?
Yeah, so we're for sure going to meet once a year. Likely we'll have different, you know, meetups along the way. So maybe two times a year, for sure once a year as like an annual conference. We might have, you know, a mid-year type of event. And then we have a lot of people who are getting together in just local meetups. So we meet via Zoom once a month for an actual formal deep dive session on some topic. And then anytime I have a deal, we do, you know, a call on that where we bring someone on. We have them share, we do some Q&A with them, and then we kick them off the call, and then we just dissect the deal. What we like, what we don't like, what are the issues? Do we like the terms? Do we not? Do we need to renegotiate something? So it's pretty cool.
That's a great format. They must have a lot of fun with that as well.
Oh, it's a blast. And then you get to see people's superpowers. So, you know, like we've got, I mean, every profession you can think of, we've got in the mastermind. So we just did an IP deal and you know, we have an IP attorney and they're like, oh, did you consider this? And we should do that. And we've got another, I mean, literally every deal, there's someone that has true expertise in that deal. Mm-hmm. We've got a bunch of syndicators that are like high level, incredible at what they do. So anything real estate, they, you know, they'll go through it and they'll make sure that it's a good deal and they'll pump the brakes when it's not.
I love it. So of course this all ties into The Lifestyle Investor, and you wrote a book on it. Now I don't want to give away the book, and we don't have a ton of time left, but I was hoping we could go over maybe, you have the 10 commandments of lifestyle investing. I was thinking maybe we could either touch on them each quickly or potentially just talk about your top five, or just touch on your top five.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it'll probably be hard to get to all 10. Maybe we should leave your audience wanting something, but I'll make it easy for them to be able to connect.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is really important before we even dig into the book is I originally wasn't going to write this book. I knew I wanted to write a book at some point in time. And I had a bunch of friends that were like, write a book. You got to teach people this stuff. And I just kept kicking the can down the road. And I had a good buddy say, hey, Justin, you've been saying that you'll do this for a while. There doesn't seem to be a lot of urgency. So what would happen? How would you feel if you died and your daughter never got to learn any of this? And that was like a punch to the gut, but one of the greatest wake-up calls of my life. And the next day I started writing this book, and then a few months later it was done. And so I want, you know, first and foremost, everyone to know that my goal is to really teach people how to become financially free. But all the proceeds of this book go to an organization called Love Justice International. And that is a group that stops human trafficking in 17 countries around the world and growing. It's just an incredible group. And so I wanted to create something that, you know, preserves human freedom, really supports people, but then financial freedom as well. Because most of us take for granted that we have this human freedom where a lot of children don't have it. And it's really a shame and it's really disturbing. So I want to shine the light on Love Justice and on everything that's going on. And so part of this book is that it's to help people recognize where they can help.
Amen.
Yeah. So in terms of the actual commandments of the book, you know, the first one is lifestyle first, because that to me is the whole reason for having, you know, passive income and for the reason that people work. It's like to create an ideal lifestyle. And it's funny because whenever I ask people, hey, what does an ideal lifestyle look like to you? 99% of the time, they can't even articulate what it would look like. They just say, well, it's not this, and I wouldn't want this, and I hate this. All they do is they spend time talking about the things they don't like, which is the reality of their life. So the whole idea of like creating time and space to just figure out what it is that you want. What does an ideal lifestyle look like? How often are you working? Who are you spending time with? How much do you need to make per month? You know, if you were working, what would your time need to produce to do something that maybe wasn't the thing you wanted to do? And what would you do that you didn't need to make any money doing? So just kind of gaining clarity for like what life is about and the whole relationship aspect. So that is first and foremost. From there, one of the things that is really important to me is de-risking the deal. So commandment two is reduce the risk. How do we make it so we don't lose money or we don't lose much money? The goal is I don't want to lose all of it. You know, you could invest in a stock and lose everything. You could invest in a startup and lose everything. How do you invest where you have the same upside or a similar upside, but you're protected on the downside? So that, you know, there's all kinds of mechanics that can be put in place, terms, structures that can protect the dollars. And I've done this in many different deals, many different investments where it's definitely, you know, kind of gamed, if you will. It's gamed for a positive return with all these different, you know, kickers. But if things don't go right, I get my money back. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. I think most people get lost in this allure of like high returns, and people in their mind are already cashing the check before it's like a reality.
Yeah. Especially in today's age, right? Warren Buffett's number one rule, don't lose money. But a lot of people, well, I can't say that a lot of people are losing money right now because everything is going up. But certainly there's a lot of crypto scams out there. And if this is a bubble and it ever bursts, a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Absolutely no doubt. The third commandment is to find invisible deals. So most people, they investors, retail investors, meaning they're getting the most expensive products with the most expensive fees that are not as good as what your sophisticated investors get. So I like to find deals that are not on the market, that are maybe they don't even know that they want to sell yet, but I approach them and say, hey, do you want to sell a percentage or all of your business? Or, hey, you look, you know, would you be interested in raising money? I can collateralize against this and you can have some working cash flow. Whatever it is, a lot of the deals I do, a retail investor could never find them. B, I negotiate preferred terms, so we get deals that no one else gets. And then C, it's just kind of unique structures and unique deals just all across the board. So, you know, that's kind of fun. And just to give a couple more that I think are really unique commandments. My fourth one is to get the principal back quickly. And so in this commandment, I talk a lot about the velocity of money and what it looks like to invest, let's say $100,000 into one deal. And maybe it's a one-year note with an equity kicker. And in a year, you get that money back. You can reinvest the same dollars, but you have equity in the company that you got all the money back from. And maybe you do a real estate deal this time. And in a year, year and a half, it's refied out. You get all those dollars back. You still have equity in the real estate. You then take that money and you invest it in an operating company with a unique structure where it's highly collateralized. And you can do it on a note, or you can do an accelerated distribution schedule where you make more of the distributions until your original investment is paid back. So in this case, $100,000, you get all that money back and you still have equity in the company. So the whole idea of people wanting to invest and not know what's going to happen for a long period of time, you don't even know for 10, 15, 20 years if your investment even made it. That to me is crazy and really should just be like a small percentage of the portfolio, not a ton of it. And so I love helping people get their money back and repurposing it and just getting more equity in different deals.
Sounds beautiful.
So, and there's a structure, a strategy. It's most people don't think about money this way. And so once they do, it's just a mindset shift. And people, the moment you get this concept, everything changes. And this, you know, next one, commandment five, creating cash flow immediately. Like that one is just, for me, such a standard foundational principle that I like to invest in cash flow. I like to, I know how to value cash flow. So to me, if things get bad, the market gets strained, something happens, a cash flowing business is propped up and you have a lot more time to be able to figure it out in a crash or in, a not ideal market. And also when it's going well, you've got extra cash flow to invest in other deals. So most people, they have all their money in the stock market. They use 401ks. Then they've got a percentage that they just angel invest with, even though they have no experience as an angel investor, and lose all their money. And these are like the riskiest ways to do it, because you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And I call startup investing or angel investing like, you know, a 0% interest loan for an undetermined period of time and a high risk asset, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, but Justin, you can put on your LinkedIn profile that you're an angel investor. I mean, don't you see the prestige in all this?
So the beauty is, who can you copy that's like a brilliant angel investor? So like I've learned that I can be more successful if I just follow people like Naval Ravikant and just do what he does. Mimic his, you know, investments, because he's way smarter than I am. Then I don't have to worry about trying to figure these deals out. And then the other thing I think is important is, instead of taking your principal that you could be earning lifestyle income on, wait till you have the income, the cash flow, the surplus, and then just invest the surplus in the risky deals. And so it's not that I don't do those. It's not that there's not a place for it. It's just there might be a better way to do things first and create your foundation.
It's like earn your lottery ticket.
Yes.
You know, yeah,
totally.
I love it. So that's five of them. We'll save the other five. We'll leave a link to pick up the book, of course. And I love the what you're doing with the book and the calls that you're putting that towards. I think that's fantastic. So for closing, Justin, we've covered a lot and this has been a lot of fun. There's so much more to talk about, but I want to hear about what one of your favorite deals is that you've done, given the broad spectrum of very interesting things that you've, you've invested in?
Well, this is good timing because I've got an investment. I just closed on a deal, just sold it last week. So it's gone full cycle, which is nice. So during COVID, I noticed that a whole bunch of people were buying dogs. My friends who didn't want dogs bought dogs. My friends who had one dog and said they'd never get a dog, or another dog, got a dog. I mean, literally, my friends, everyone who said I would never get a dog or never get another dog, they got a dog or another dog, or
even
both.
Even your friends that had cats bought a dog.
You know it. It was just crazy. And then everyone's complaining about, you know, them going to the bathroom everywhere and chewing their stuff up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, dog training company, this sounds amazing because people are going to need this. And so I had a couple of partners. My main partner, who I had worked with in Cutco, actually, he had a corporate job, was wanting to get out of that corporate job. We ended up finding a dog training company that I could buy, and I could pay him $10,000 more as a salary than what he was making at his corporate job. So it got him out of the rat race. Super cool. I feel like we got a fair offer on it. I have a lender that financed most of it. So I came out of pocket, really just money from another business venture that we did together for the down payment, and ended up increasing this cash flow in one period of time to $10,000 to $12,000 of profit a day. So I put $100,000 down to buy it. All right. Use leverage for the rest of it. We had a stint where literally we actually got to a point where we could not grow the profit anymore because we'd have to grow our location, hire more trainers. So we were just like booking future services, and we were like 6 months out on services. So we got to the point that we couldn't keep that. It wasn't sustainable, but we were really profiting $10,000 to $12,000 a day for a good stretch of time. Patrick Mahomes trained his dog in our studio, KC Dogs, which is really cool. And we had a UFC fighter. It was really a neat experience. So anyway, we just sold it last week at a year and a day. So long-term capital gains. And we not only got incredible cash flow for this last year, but we were able to sell it at a 2x. So, I mean, I made all my money back on that down payment in about 3 months. So I was, you know, my risk in the deal was gone. And then we were able to 2x it. So it was a 7-figure exit. And it was just an exciting experience. My partners had never experienced anything like this before. And it was just a really cool 1 year and one day project. And by the way, I don't own a dog. I know nothing about dogs.
See, there you go. That is not at all what I was expecting you to say when I asked you that question. I'm sure the listeners weren't expecting that either. But astute observation. Because I had a similar observation, of course, didn't act on it, but I was in Charlotte during COVID, and there's news that all the dog shelters were sold out. And that's, I was right. Like, wow, this is a fantastic benefit consequence of COVID, is like all these poor dogs that didn't have a home are now getting adopted. But you actually saw the same observation, turned it into an incredible gain, and had a lot of fun presumably doing it as well. That's incredible, man.
I'm
sure you got lots of stories like that as well.
It's crazy. And it's all about paying attention to the trends. Like, what is going to happen? I mean, we could talk about this. I got e-commerce examples because that to me is big and I want my investment capital in there. Cannabis, hemp, CBD, which I think could be the greatest, return opportunity that we will ever see in our lifetime. Mm. You know, that and crypto to me are kind of like your two greatest income shifters and capital opportunities. It's like we're experiencing prohibition in cannabis and these huge conglomerates that are just going to, the moment it's federally legal, are just going to gobble up all these small shops. I mean, it is poised. And I've got all these, I have so many different like kind of niche trendy things that I'm paying attention to that I love. Industrial distribution centers, same thing, because it supports e-commerce. I still love mobile home parks because it's affordable housing, and in a recession, it performs just as well as in a peak market. So, Yeah, it's just paying attention to what's out there and what the trends look like. And then how do you structure a deal so in a worst case scenario, you're not losing all your money, but in a likely scenario, you're making a great return. That's it. You know, finding income amplifiers, which I talk about in my book, and asymmetric risk return, where it's little risk but great return.
Good stuff, Justin. Well, you're a busy guy. Lots to learn from you, and you know, thanks for all the work you're doing in bringing networks together and communities together. Because I think that the 2020s are going to be the are proving to be and will be the best time to ever be an investor. After that, I think the world is going to get a bit weird. You might want to look out if populations start declining or capitalism comes in check. But for now, I think the next decade is you need to be an investor. You need to put your money to work for you.
That's right. There's no doubt about that.
Before we take off, Justin, where can we find out more, follow you, and of course, a little perk for your book?
Sure. Yeah. So you can find any of my info at justindonald.com. So I've got, you know, a podcast, I've got an online course, a masterclass, which was previously a one-day event, just repurposed into, you know, an on-demand type of product. I've got the mastermind, I've got one-on-one coaching, but a lot of the kind of higher ticket stuff is waitlist only and kind of sold out. But for the book, I'd love to just offer to your audience a way to get it for free. With just pay the shipping. So if you go to lifestyleinvestorbook.com, you'll be able to get the book and some other things that I'm giving away with it.
Oh man, that's awesome. I almost feel bad that we're in a sense not contributing to your charitable cause, but
well, people can most certainly get it on Amazon, and I'm happy to have them do either, but I'm still great. There are still right. Proceeds even when people pay for shipping. There's a certain amount that I'm committed to, even if it's not making money. Like each book that sold, I am personally committed to funding. I've got some different goals for how much capital I want to donate to that organization.
Awesome, man. Good deed. I'm sure the listeners will love that. Justin, it's been a lot of fun. Looking forward to sharing this with the listeners, and best of luck with everything that you're doing and bringing networks together. And I definitely hope to meet up in the future and join one of your conferences and seminars in the future as well.
I love it. Well, I'm excited to you know, not only do that, but you know, get a chance to hang out some more on my show, and we're gonna have some fun. I think this is the start of a whole lot of fun and a whole lot of continued dialogue.
I agree. Part two over on your podcast coming soon.
I love it.
Oh, Sam. So I started to like his stuff, like second half of the interview, but that first kind of introduction where he talked about Cutco and MLMs, I'm definitely not into network marketing.
Yeah, but that's because you've never done Cutco.
I have. You don't know that. Because
you did Cutco?
Yeah, when I was like 16 or 17, I answered one of those ads saying, you know, $15 an hour job, $18 an hour job. And I went through the whole thing. I got like, I suckered in my parents to pay for the thing that, you know, the demo set. And then I had to call like my aunts and my uncles. And then my dad basically beat my ass saying like, look, don't be selling, you know, don't be like selling to your family, because they will buy from you just because you are family, not necessarily because they actually want the product. And it's like, it's, you know, it's burning bridges.
I don't know, man. I mean, there's certainly, Cutco is a very successful business and there's not a lot of bad rap about it, but I do agree that certain sales tactics with Cutco and other businesses are pretty aggressive, and Cutco certainly is. But I have to say, Cutco's a fantastic product. Like I earned, you know, when you're selling Cutco, you earn product, right? And I still have my product. So when was I selling that stuff? 16, 17, 17 years old. I'm 36 now, almost 37, 20 years. And it's still an incredible fork and knife set. And everybody that I sold it to still loves it. You know, so you're not selling snake oil. You're selling a fantastic product. But what I think is great about the Cutco organization, it's not really multi-marketing, although you do, you know, you do bring people into the organization. A good friend of mine, Anthony Mergio, brought me in. He brought in our friend Brian Rabbit. And like, I would say half of my fraternity probably had experience in Cutco. And it's some of the best experience you can get. Now, I agree, like, you know, going to your neighbors and asking them to call 10 friends and like invite you into their house is pushing it. And that's sort of where I lost interest in doing it. I just didn't have the tenacity or the, I don't even know what you call it, the desire to push family and friends to that degree. But there's arguably no better sales and marketing training out there for someone that's in their late teens than Cutco. And I think they've proven that successful, but they also have a fantastic product that you're selling. So you're not selling crap.
Well, that I actually agree with. And out of all the network marketing companies, they're one that happens to have a decent product. But at the end of the day, $400 for a knife set, you can get something either way better for $400 without the fancy marketing, because that money comes from somewhere. Or you can pay half the price for, you know, a really good knife, like a better knife set or the same quality knife set somewhere else without, you know, that money. But I do agree that
I'm telling you, I don't think you can buy better knives out there in the entire world. I think there's a lot of people that would agree with that.
Yeah, but those people are the people who have never owned any other knife set. Like
probably like Henkels or
exactly. Like, here's the thing about knives is most people just have crappy old knives in their house because they never spent more than $20 on them. So when you so when you come in with a decent set, it's going to be way better. But
yeah,
so for $400, you can definitely get a way better chef quality knife set from Henkels or one of the actual, you know, real brands. Or you could pay, you know, half the price and get something equivalent.
But you can't buy it from your 17-year-old neighbor who's struggling to pay the bills to save up for college, Johnny.
Yeah. You know what? If that, you know, here's the thing is I agree that it does train people to be very good salesmen, but in a very kind of sharkish way. And that's why I don't trust people who, you know, go through MLMs or network marketing, is because they were the type to be willing to sell to their neighbor and their, you know, and their aunts and uncles and, you know, basically sell to family, which is something that I've always been very against.
Yeah. It's a good discussion, and it's a difficult, it's a good debate, right? Because I think a lot of successful people have things from their early days or even that they're currently doing that they're not super proud of. But how do you get an edge when you're 17, 18, 19? How do you get real world-class experience? Or even when you're out of college, you know, it's not going and working for a big boring corporate, right? You have to put yourself into uncomfortable positions, and you have to find ways to get an edge and to get really killer experience if you want to get ahead. And, you know, even going into my history back in, so I did Cutco when I was in college. I did all types of stuff. You know, I was the Sobe energy brand manager at Florida State, which is totally cool. You know, I started a business online, which is totally cool, but I also did multi-level marketing. And frankly, when I was 20 years old, I didn't know what multi-level marketing was. It was like, hey, you sell these dietary supplements and you bring your fraternity in and they sell it and like you make money. We're like, oh, this is great, you know? And then I did affiliate marketing and, like, you know, I was selling leads for dating and leads for dietary pills. And I was using some marketing that was, I wouldn't do today, I'll tell you that much. But back then I was like, I, you know, you don't really know what's right and wrong in the business world. You're just trying to make money and get an edge. And you're trying to get his experience as quick as possible. And looking back, would I do those things today? I wouldn't. But am I glad I did them? I'm very glad I did them. Did I sell some things to people that were a little bit slight? Probably. And I'm not, you know, I don't think I did anyone real harm, but I'm not super proud of those, but I'm definitely glad I did them because I got ahead. And now by getting ahead, I can make a much, much better impact on a lot of things. From mentorship to advisory to charitable stuff. So I think if you pulled a lot of really successful people out there, or even just people that are just ahead of the pack, I think you'd find somewhere in college or early out, they endeavored in things that they might not do now, but it helped them to gain good experience and grow their ambitions.
Yeah, definitely.
Come on, Johnny, 100%. I know you got to have something back there, back in the history.
100%. There's definitely things that I'm not super proud of in my past, where, I was young and stupid, yeah, just like everyone is. But the difference, yeah, is you and I, and the reason why we trust each other and people trust us is because we, have learned from our mistakes, and we are trying to help people not make the same ones. So if someone ever asked, mm-hmm, me today, they're like, hey, should I get into some network marketing MLM? I would say, no way. Like I said, learn from my mistakes, don't do it. And it's, I don't know. I mean, there's good marketing, and everything, the world has some kind of marketing, right? Whether it's Coca-Cola, mm-hmm, or Apple, but there's also kind of, marketing that's like a little bit too good, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I know some of that marketing.
Yeah. So
gotta put lipstick on the pig sometimes, Johnny.
Yeah. Yeah. And and it's hard because it's hard to sell something like, hey, just read, like some $20 book that doesn't have any upsells, and go buy some Vanguard index funds with basically no fees or almost very low fees. Cause
yeah,
like, nobody makes money from that, right? But yeah, instead, if you have a book where the upsell is an expensive inner circle, expensive coaching, it doesn't matter if they make any money from the book, they make money on the back end.
Yeah. So that's actually how I got introduced to Justin. Was a mutual friend of mine, Brian Ravitt, who's actually been on the podcast before, was in our fraternity, very successful sales guy. And he, Brian, I don't think he'd mind me saying, just find, save very prudently and accumulated a pretty good nest egg. And a handful of months ago came around and was like, hey, I want to start investing. I know we've talked about it before, but like, I really need to take some action. And he turned around kind of a couple of weeks later, is like, hey man, I joined this group. It was, I want to say it was 30,000 to join.
Oh,
and yeah. And I was like, whoa, man, pump the brakes. Like, why don't you listen to like 5 of our episodes first and see what's up, see if that gives you some basis. Cause I don't think you need all this, but I'll tell you what, man, ever since, and why I was interested in having Justin on the show and asked for the introduction was this, what I realized was like, it didn't matter how you took the first step to investing. It is such an important part of your life to get started as early as possible. Whether you listen to free content like ours, or you subscribe to a group, or pay some small fee, or even if you bite off a bigger ticket, but you get the value out of it and you get into it, it's worth it. Would I pay 30,000 or more to join an investing group before? No. Now, probably not, unless it had some serious, I take that back, because I basically did one. I did Atlas 400 because I thought it was going to be like a business group, and I dropped it like 12 months later. It was like a 30,000 sunk cost. So that's the big risk. But Brian's come back to me several times and been like, dude, this has been the best thing ever. Like I go to these meetups, I'm meeting all these incredibly successful people. We're doing deals together. I think he's already in like 6 deals together. He's like, I'm generating a lot of cash flow and learn about this. And I can just tell he's a totally transformed person. This is a guy that was going and knocking on, 15 doors in a day. And he's still like 35, 36 years old. He's been doing it since like college. Like how sustainable is that? Right. Mm-hmm. And now he's fully in the mindset of like, of investing, doing deals this way, making cash flow and stuff. So I'm like, it's been a total change in his, he's always had these thoughts, but it's been a total change in his psyche and how he's viewing the world and future work, future income for himself. And so I think that there's certainly serious value there, whether it fits for me or not. I'm glad he did what he had to do to get, to get passionate about investing.
It's good. Yeah. It is very good that he got passionate about investing. I can see why these groups, attract a certain type of people. People probably make a lot of money from their jobs or careers, don't know anything about investing, jump straight in, get hyped up, go to these meetups, see these deals, see other people doing well. What I'm afraid of is then it becomes like an echo chamber of, other people who are you know, kind of that same boat, because anybody who is willing to spend $30,000 to join an investment group is going to have a similar mindset versus the kind of super prudent, you know, investor, like, you know, on the opposite the end, like the FIRE people, right? Which maybe some of them are way too conservative and way too cheap. But, you know, those people are also in an echo chamber because they're all about, you know, just saving money, having super low fees, only investing in, you know, Vanguard, you know, et cetera. The truth, you know, what I like about our podcast, and I think why people listen to us, is because we have a very wide range of guests, but also types of investors. So it's not an echo chamber. You can really learn from all different walks of life, because at the end of the day, nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. And right now, because everything has been on a tear and the economy has been growing so fast and everything is going up, pretty much every investment for the last, you know, 2-3 years has been a winner. So as long as you were in the market or you were invested somehow, you were making money, and it's been easy to sell that.
And don't forget, Johnny, we're putting our money where our mouth is after almost every single episode and sharing our returns and our performance every quarter, but also we have nothing to sell. And so, you know, our interests are aligned with the listeners, but this made me think, come on, Boss Lounge guys, we're not charging $30,000. Just upgrade to Patreon for $5 a month.
Yeah, seriously.
Support your boy.
Seriously.
Support your boys.
Well, I mean, that's why we have a lot of members who've been paying $25 a month for like the VIP access. Yeah. And they don't even really take advantage of the VIP features, like, you know, like a thank you shout out in the episode. Like, they just don't care about the actual perks. They're just like, these guys have given me good, genuine advice and, you know, have opened my mind to investments, have made me money. $25 a month is nothing. You know, here's like a thank you. So we appreciate you guys so much, really.
Yeah. And those are our super VIPs that John is talking about, $25 a month. You can join Patreon today for $5 a month. And in all seriousness, we really appreciate you guys, because again, we wouldn't have Derek without the Patreon support, and without Derek, frankly, well, this shit would be really unorganized.
Yeah. So we love you, Derek, and we love you guys, you Patreon. So thank you guys so much. Yeah. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I hope you learned a lot. Let us know, you know, in the comments, you know, in the Boss Lounge on the Facebook group, what your thoughts are on all of this. And yeah, it's been fun. It's been a fun episode and fun way of kind of diving in on this.
Absolutely. And something we don't give enough thank yous to are all the 5-star reviews. I mean, without those reviews, we never would have even gotten out of the gates and gotten a bunch of these big name guests on. But at 200 episodes, I think we're nearly at 500 5-star reviews in the US alone. But guys, these are tremendously important to us, not only for us to get good guests on, but it's a feel good. You know, we see those come in. It's like gasoline in the tank. We want to go out and record more episodes and keep discovering new ways to invest our money. And that's all because we know that by your 5-star review that we're creating value for you guys. So please keep those coming. If you haven't had the time yet, you can literally do it in 30 seconds. Click 5 stars, say a couple of nice words, compliment my looks, and make a joke about Johnny and you're off.
I love it. All right, guys. See you in the next episode. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.